Welcome to Jazz Backstory, Season 3, Episode 27. This is Monk Grow offering up a third take on band leaders. We've arbitrarily, but with justification, cited Ellington and Basie as numbers 1 and 2 on the jazz royalty leaderboard, a duke and a count. There was another guy who played the licorice stick and literally carried the title, the King of Swing. While this king business may have been jump-started by an astute publicist, Benny Goodman can lay a strong claim to leading the most successful big band during the swing era, as well as sharing the best clarinet title with rival Artie Shaw. And he is hands down the head of the pack as far as being the subject of stories, myths, and jazz lore. Bassist and author Bill Crow gathered hundreds of musicians' stories in his marvelous Jazz Anecdotes book. He opened a chapter on Benny Goodman with this description of the Swing King. Benny Goodman has probably generated more anecdotes than any other musician. He was a superior instrumentalist and an extremely successful band leader. He was also absent-minded, inscrutable, ruthless, and often infuriating. His eccentricities on and off the bandstand gave the musicians who worked for him abundant material for backstage stories. Here's a couple of them. One of the best Goodman stories came from vocalist Peggy Lee, concerning the time when he and Peggy jumped into a cab outside the RCA building. Awaiting instructions, the driver remained motionless while Benny sat there quietly for a few minutes. Finally, the driver said, "Well, buddy?" Benny looked up with a start and said, How much is that?" as he searched for his wallet and started to get out of the cab. The second story is credited to pianist Andre Previn. "Benny came to the round table in Manhattan to hear my trio. He wanted us to record with him and said he'd like us to be at his house in Connecticut at 9 a.m. the next day to rehearse. But Benny," I said, "we work here until 4 a.m. He suggested a solution, that we go straight home after the gig. During rehearsal, we had a lot of trouble because it was bitterly cold in his house and our fingers were practically numb. Helen Ward, who was singing on the date, finally said, 'Benny, you know what the trouble is? It's just terribly cold in here.' Benny said, 'You're absolutely right,' and he promptly put on a warm sweater and resumed rehearsing." Benny Goodman had a habit of absently staring for minutes at a time, and not off into space, but at individuals. His sidemen dubbed it the Ray, and nothing good usually followed it. Sonny Igoe filled the drum chair in Benny's band for 2 years, starting in 1948, and shares his Ray experience.
But it was funny in those days, the way everybody said, "Boy, you got to watch it. You working for Benny? Did you get the Ray yet? You know, yeah. they talk about the Ray. I have a story about the Ray. If you're interested, have you heard about that?
Please,
well, but
go ahead.
The thing is that he would. He even said to us one night at the Palladium in Hollywood, he says, "You've heard a lot about the Ray." He says, "I'm not really mad at anybody." He says, "Sometimes I daydream and my mind wanders and I just happen to be looking somebody's direction. I'm not trying to stare them down or anything like that, you know, blah, blah, blah." So, okay. So now we're in Canada, doing a whole string of one-nighters in the hockey rinks. They used to put the boards down on the ice, you know, so people could dance. And then they would build this tremendous movie set for the band. Like, they'd have the saxes down here and then each section up. The drums were, like, up there, way up at the top. Unbelievable. You couldn't hear anything. You couldn't hear the band. You were so far away. And so, and Benny's down here. We play the first set, and Benny's down here. He's looking around, puzzled, and he looks up at me, and I had another small set down in front for this small group.
Right. Yeah.
So he looks up to me, and he goes, "Come on down here and play down here." Okay? So not a word was said. So I pick up my sticks, brushes, go downstairs to the other set, and played a set down there, and I'm in seventh heaven because the whole band is right here in my ear. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a feeling that is. But when you had the brilliance of the brass and the saxophones right in, oh, man, it's hi-fi, the original hi-fi. So anyway, okay, we take a break. Now we're coming back up. I'm down front now. I got a little closer and got myself comfortable. And I have my music stand here in case I need some charts. And Benny's right over my music stand like this, eye level. I'm kind of kitty-cornered to him. Like that. Mm-hmm. I look here. There he is. Now, he had the habit of having his clarinet under his arm like this, you know, holding it this way. So he was in that pose, looking right at me. And I could hear some murmurs in the background, guys in the sax section saying, uh-oh, looks like it's Sonny's turn in the barrel tonight or something like that. All right, all these kind of things. So he's just looking at me over the top of the stand, over the top of my stand, you know, mm-hmm. just staring at me. And I had enough. So I stood up. Now, this is true. I stood up and I went like this in front of his eyes. He never budged. And the band fell. Everybody's having hysterics in the background. They probably figured I'd get canned right then, you know. What? It's a sit down, kid, what are you doing? You know? Yeah. He never knew I did it. See, he just said, okay, let's go. We're going to the next number.
Lord.
You never knew. That story got around town even. And they were, geez, I heard what you did to Benny. It was funny. Never, he never even acknowledged it, you know. And but I did see him ride some guys sometimes that I felt sorry for him, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those things that every once in a while, if he got in that mood, if he knew he could ride you, he'd ride you. There are people like that, you know. If they knew they can take advantage of you, they'll do it or try.
Benny was very particular about his drummers. Perhaps that explains why Sonny Igoe was not the drummer for the Benny Goodman European Tour of 1950. Remember Ed Shaughnessy from our Basie episode? At age 21, he found himself in the hot seat.
Did you like working with Benny?
I like working with Benny a lot because he was playing great at that time. Uh-huh. And I got along with Benny, who's hard to get along with. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Most people know that and don't know what instrument he plays. But when I was used to sit in with Lionel Hampton's band, he said to me one night, I hear you going with the old man. I said, yeah, I'm going to go to Europe with Benny. I was 21. And here's what he said to me. He said, now, if he gets weird on you, get weirder. I said, this is the key? He said, this is the key. He said, didn't I get along great with him? I said, yeah, you seem to have a good relationship with him. He said, well, just if he gets a little out, go a little outer. So when this happened, and I was late at a rehearsal, and I walked through the thing, and he looked at me, and he put the glasses down with the famous ray, and he started in. I said, Jesus, Benny, are we just here to jerk around, or are we going to rehearse? May God be my judge. That's what I said. I tried to go as far out as I could. And he said, here's what he said. He said, the kid's right. Let's play. And he never said a word. And I was over 35, 40 minutes late. And this was Paris, his biggest concert. So you know he was going to chew my thing out real good. And I did a hamp. And I went out on him. And I went out. And I tell you, I did it one other time in a lesser way, and he never bothered me. I think he thought the kid is definitely crazy, but he's a nice little drummer. Leave him alone. But he picked on everybody else. He cut out Roy Eldridge's solos in certain places because he was getting too much applause.
Yeah.
He cut out Zoot Sim solos all through Scandinavia because Zoot was more popular than he was there. May God be my judge. This is the truth, I'm telling you. You know he was a very strange man.
Yeah, I've read.
But thank God for Hamp. Hamp straightened me out. Yeah. Just go a little further, baby, and it worked like a charm. Isn't that a funny story?
That's great.
Yeah. He never told me a thing about playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people said to me, you are going to get crucified by him. You're a bebop drummer. I said, no. I'm known as a bebop drummer, mm-hmm. but I know how to play for Benny Goodman. What do you do? You play simpler. Yeah. You play straight. I mean, you got to be a rocket scientist. You don't play behind Benny Goodman the way you'd play behind Bud Powell.
Yeah.
I don't understand when people think that.
There were a few musicians who did not have to resort to outmaneuvering Benny and truly enjoyed the experience of playing beside him. And perhaps opposites do attract. If there was a contest for the nicest jazz musician, guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli would be in the running. Here's Bucky from our 2003 interview.
Then I went away with Benny Goodman in 1970. I went away for 6 weeks with Ruth. And I thought it was important to go with him because I always wanted to play with him.
Yeah.
I had done a few gigs with him at the Waldorf. But this was a serious gig, and I said, let's do it.
Well, you had a... seemed to have a great relationship with him for, what, almost 20 years?
Oh, Benny was the king, the king. I love Benny Goodman. He was a teacher. He was almost like a father to me. We discussed a lot of things, and we knew where he was. I knew where he was. He knew where I was. And we always had a good time.
Mm-hmm. You knew what he wanted?
Yeah, I know. I told you. I said... he never rarely counted off. He would start the number, and that was the tempo. You had to pick, know where that second beat was. See? And I thought, I was so close to him, I watched his foot all the time, so I know exactly where it was.
Why did so many people have a tough time with him?
They didn't understand him. They knew that he was tough, and then they would get smart with him, and then they start bumping heads. And Benny was the type of guy that was a sideman like they were two times over. So he knew all the jokes, and he always got the last word in, always. One time... we were going down to down south. I won't name the trombone player, but when they got there, he said, Benny, we got time to play golf. Benny, this is a good idea. Let's go. They went to the golf course, played some. And when I got to the gig that night, Benny introduces the trombone player to play a solo. Trombone player goes up to the microphone and says, well, you all know this leader here as being the king of swing. I played golf with him today, and his name is now the king of no swing. Everybody chuckled, you know, he laughed. Now the guy's playing a solo. At the end of the solo, he's trying to hit a high note, and he's struggling to hit the high note, see? Well, Benny gets a clarinet and hits it for him, and he says, all you got to do is keep your head down.
It's jazz vocabulary time, with a brief off-ramp to sports. Numerous jazz musicians are avid golfers, and Benny's crack about keeping your head down was a put-down to the trombonist who thought he could make the clarinetist the butt of his joke. Actually, for wind instrument players, keep your head up is an instruction often delivered by annoyed instructors. And Benny Goodman's anecdotes frequently include the term pops. Benny called everyone pops, thus freeing himself of remembering names. Louis Armstrong also employed pops for the same purpose, while Lionel Hampton preferred gates. Lastly, Ed Shaughnessy referred to bebop drumming, historically more active and less predictable than the previous swing style of keeping time. Bill Crow's book includes a relevant entry about saxophonist Lester Prez Young, a swing-era icon. In those days, drummers were beginning to use the bass drum for accents rather than steady rhythm. Lester Young preferred the style of drumming he grew up with. No bombs, he told the drummers. Just chink-de-boom for Prez. Benny Goodman went for chink-de-boom as well. As a means to survival, sidemen frequently devised inside phrases and jokes to lighten the darker aspects of touring and dealing with a band leader's idiosyncrasies. Saxophonists Jerry Dodgen and Flip Phillips were section mates during a second European tour with the King of Swing. Here's Jerry.
And all the Benny Goodman stories are true, you know. So that'll cover a lot right there. And I just learned a lot. It was just a lot to, with Flip Phillips. I mean, what a wonderful musician he is. And he is to this day. He's 80 now, and he still plays wonderfully, amazing, just great. And he was such a moving spirit in this band. I mean, he always had a great sense of humor. And of course, Bill Harris has a sense of humor, and we did a lot of laughing. It was great. Whenever Benny would start to get a little tense, and I was just thinking, well, what's going to happen now? Flip would call Benny aside and say, "Benny, I'd like to talk to you for a minute." And he'd talk to him for a minute and get him laughing and come back, and we'd be okay for about 3 days. We'd be laughing and having really fun. The music better, everything's better. And then Benny started get Flip would say, "Come here." He'd talk to him about it. He said, you know, he'd talk to him for, I remember hearing one talk to him once. He said to Benny, he says, you know, Pops, you don't have to make a name for yourself. You're already the King of Swing, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we should be having a good time playing music like we are. So you don't pay us enough that we should get nervous here, you know. And it was just great. And then pretty soon he ended up by telling him, you have to remember this. Remember, IWS. Benny says, IWS? What's that? He says, I won't snap. Everybody would laugh. So that was the slogan of the tour, IWS. Yeah. Without Flip, it could have been
difficult.
A lot different. But it was just great. And every way, and musically, he played great all the time, every time.
And Flip Phillips.
You spent a little time touring with Benny Goodman, too.
Yeah.
Jerry Dodgen.
Yeah, I saw him the other day. I didn't saw him. He called me before he came here. Yeah. He was quite a player, Jerry.
He's a nice guy. He told me to ask you about something.
Oh, yeah.
The IWS tour. He made me promise I'd ask.
IWS.
You want to talk about that for a moment?
I put it on my horn. I'm on my saxophone case, IWS. Well, he told you to say that. Well, Benny used to pick on everybody.
Yeah.
Picked on everybody. But me, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
And that IWS was, I won't snap. I don't care what you say, I won't snap, you know. And when people used to get mad at him, I'd go, IWS. Okay. That's what I told you. I won't snap.
Wow.
Which I did one time.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't snap out. Benny used to pick on everybody, you know. So I got fed up. I went in his dressing room one time. I said, look, Pops, what are you putting down? I said, you're the best clarinet player in the world. You played Carnegie Hall, you played Symphony Hall, you played all over. The only place you haven't played is the moon. I said, go out and play your clarinet, and so you play better than anybody. His answer was, you know, Pops, you're right. And since that time, he went out and played, and he played better than he ever played ever in his life. His wife, John Hammond, came over. I never heard him play like that. Wow. He was like a baby. He needed a little...
He needed someone to tell him.
He was picking on her. Which was, I told him the truth, you know. He was the best clarinet player. He played all of it, but he was picking on things, you know. He had some kind of a complex. I said, don't do it. I just go out and play your clarinet. You've been all over the world. I still remember the answer. He goes,
yeah.
You know, Pops, you're right. And that straightened him out. And he could play. Right after that, he played it. Everybody was astounded. just woke them up like it.
A quick reminder, you can listen and view the complete videos of all these interviews, currently numbering 500 plus on the Filius, that's F-I-L-L-I-U-S, the Filius Jazz YouTube channel. Admission is free. Skitch Henderson was a precursor to Doc Severinsen and was a household name when Johnny Carson hosted The Tonight Show in New York City. Mr. Henderson was a pianist and conductor and could list Frank Sinatra, the New York Pops Orchestra, and The Tonight Show Band on his resume. During our 1998 interview, he shared a revealing story about Benny Goodman.
This was a funny night with Goodman. I asked Goodman, I think I must have asked him for 2 or 3 years to come and do the show, and he never would do it. Benny was, you know, Benny. No, Pops, forget it, Pops. I'm not going to come down, have to rehearse. And I said, so at last I saw him one day, and I said, Benny, I'm going to give you a gift. I said, I'm going to get all of Fletcher's old charts, and they have been blown up just a bit. They're 5 saxophone instead of 4. And I want you to just be good for you. And I said, I want you to do it for the guys in the band. I asked him who he wanted to play piano and interested that he called Marion McPartland, as opposed to Teddy Wilson,
yeah,
which fascinated me. Anyway, it was a hell of a night. 2 years pass. I'm conducting in Brisbane, Australia. Now, I'm not in Omaha. I'm in Brisbane. And the phone rings, and it's Benny. I mean, I hear this voice. Hey, Pops, I left my braces in Sydney. Do you have any spare braces? You know, suspenders. So I said, yeah, I guess so. And then that night after that concert, he and I sat and talked in this smelly gymnasium where they played. And it kind of broke my heart because I said, we had a confession period to each other. He was talking to me about his unhappiness that he hadn't, even though he was a very successful player and guest, he had no placement with a group because nobody would work for him. You know, he was so mean, you know, let's face it, you know. So I, in this strange night in Australia, said, Benny, I have very few things that ever made me smile on The Tonight Show, you know, because I was always rankling from upstairs about the clients. And I said, you know, the band took care of itself, and I just had to work out the schedule. But I said, the night you came on and played, it really thrilled me. I said, to hear that you could have that kind of virtuosity in every chair. I mean, there wasn't a guy there that, you know, hadn't paid their dues 100 times over. And there's dead silence, and he looks at me, and he said, yeah, Pops, but it didn't swing. And then he launched into a tirade. He had just toured with a British band of 5 brass, 4 saxophones, and 3 rhythm, like the old, old Benny, 1936 Benny Goodman band. And that's what he was happy with. I'll never forget that. Yeah, Pops. But it didn't swing. That, Bucky Pizzarelli and I talk about, because Bucky was good to the end. He'd go to the house in Connecticut and play with Benny, just the two of them. Mm-hmm. Just to make him play, you know. But it was strange that he had that.
He wasn't even happy with perfection, it seems like.
And he was such a perfectionist, you know. Yeah, Pops, but it didn't swing. That was for me almost like a curtain coming down in Benny's life with me. Mm. And I told the guys.
Yeah.
Of course, they said, what else do you expect him to say?
Right. I suppose there is now a label for Benny Goodman's behavior, mindset, and personality. There's a line in the tune, It Had to Be You, that goes, with all of your faults, I love you still. I can't say how many of Benny's sidemen loved him, but he did have his fans dancing in the aisles at Carnegie Hall, and importantly made a significant contribution to American society. In 1947, Jackie Robinson jogged out to the ball field with his Brooklyn Dodgers teammates and became the first African-American baseball player in the major leagues. It was national and international news. 9 years before that, a less publicized but equally momentous event jump-started a major shift in the music and entertainment world. While racially mixed jazz groups had been recording for some years previous, the inclusion of Lionel Hampton, Teddy Wilson, and Charlie Christian at Benny Goodman Orchestra concerts opened the doors for mixed bands and eventually integrated audiences. Music has always been ahead of multiple curves. We'll call on the now familiar voice of John Hendricks for a wrap-up on The King of Swing and Episode 27.
Absolutely. You
know, like Benny Goodman, yeah.
Benny Goodman is an American social hero. He is a hero in the development of American society. Outside of music, Benny Goodman is a social hero because his love for the music was so pure that he just did not understand why he couldn't have Lionel Hampton in his band. Mm-hmm. And then Charlie Christian, and then Teddy Wilson, you know. He just didn't understand that. And the bean counters and the accountants and the lawyers, they tried to explain to him, Benny, you lose your show. They will not renew you on the Camel Caravan if you do this. So, you know, they gave him all those very hard and fast business reasons. Mm-hmm. But he refused to understand them. Yeah. He said, I like those guys.
Yeah.
So he did what people have to march now to achieve.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's because of the power of the music, the love of the music.
Tune in next week for episode 28, our last focus on band leaders, a sampling offer. It includes anecdotes about Buddy Rich, Glenn Miller, Stan Kenton, and a band that had 2.5 leaders. You might wonder how that worked out. This is Monk Rowe for the Phileas Jazz Archive. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you on the flip side.